cases, that's 21-151, Doreen Barrow et al. Versus the Village of New Miami. For the appellant, Mr. Engel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. The Village of New Miami and its commercial partner reaped huge profits by establishing a bare-bones administrative process designed not to maximize public safety, but to maximize revenue. The procedural due process guarantees of the Ohio Constitution prohibit government entities from levying fines on individuals without providing a meaningful opportunity to challenge the basis of that decision. The system before the court today was consciously designed from the beginning to cut off any ability of a motorist to contest that they were not speeding. A motorist has no ability to independently verify that the equipment operated remotely by a Maryland corporation was working correctly. The record here shows that there is little to no real interest in public safety. Instead, the math was simple. The more people who pay fines, the more money flows into the bank accounts of the village and its business partner. The overwhelming majority of people who received citations saw this for what it was, a system where the cost of challenging a ticket combined with a small likelihood of success meant motorists were coerced into paying fines. The Ohio Constitution guarantees some ability to test the evidence used by the government. These tests are not hurdles designed to make government inefficient. They're designed to assure citizens that the decisions made by the government are accurate and reliable.
Council, assuming we agree with you completely, if we issue an opinion, how many jurisdictions will that affect? How many jurisdictions are following this current procedure?
At the moment, Your Honor, we believe that no one is following the current procedure because the legislature has taken a number of actions that prohibit this type of operation.
So we're trying to amend it 1901?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Revised Code 1901, the amended statute, 1901.20?
Yes. Yes, the current statute, the current law provides a number of restrictions on the ability of speed camera operators to do what they did here, which is set up these separate civil administrative procedures.
So what would a decision by us do?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
So what would a decision by this court, what effect would it have?
A decision by this court would have two main effects. The first effect is for the motorist who paid fines under an unconstitutional scheme by the village, they would get their money back. And that's only right and only fair, that people who were subjected to unconstitutional actions of the government should receive refunds for that. Second, Your Honor, and perhaps more importantly, is a decision by this court would have a reach far beyond just speed cameras. Because if the court were to say that if a municipality imposes fines low enough, they can create civil administrative procedures that swallow up all the criminal law and can be used to raise revenue and not have to provide any due process. So what the decision of the court here today will do will be to set standards not only for speed camera cases, but for all the future actions that municipalities might take in order to raise revenue on what used to be criminal violations and would now be called civil administrative action. Whether that's the use of facial recognition software or drones or the like in the future, this court has the ability to set rules and say to the municipalities that regardless of your justification, you still have to follow and provide due process under the Constitution.
Thank you.
Now, nobody is suggesting, and I'm not suggesting, that the village was required to hold a full criminal trial or that the village was required to strictly apply the rules of evidence. And nobody is suggesting that the village was prohibited from using photographs and speed data obtained from a private company as evidence to establish liability. But we are suggesting that the constitutional guarantee of a meaningful hearing prevented the Village of New Miami and its private business partner from doing what they did here, using a veneer of public safety to privilege expediency and profits over reliability and accuracy. The program here was unconstitutional because it deprived motorists of the most fundamental requirements of due process, a meaningful hearing. The Second Circuit in the Tony decision and the 12th District in this case recognized that a motorist wishing to say, "I wasn't speeding, the radar is wrong," faced a nearly insurmountable burden. So here's the basic idea, Your Honors. Trust but verify. This court has never approved the use of an administrative scheme with the two primary features of the ordinance in this case. First, that the evidence used to fine an Ohio citizen is obtained from a private company with an interest in the outcome. And second, that the person who is subject to a fine or an adverse administrative action has no ability to review the relevant records or the persons responsible for creating the evidence. This would be like if you received a property tax bill and the property tax bill contains an appraisal of your property, but the government simply says, "We know we have this appraisal of the property that we received from a company out of state, but you're not able to see how we calculated the figures, and you're not able to challenge those figures in any meaningful way, except if you file an action in Common Pleas Court later, paying three times the amount of tax due as a filing fee, and then maybe we'll consider giving you some discovery."
So Mr. Engel, if we agree with you, this then is remanded back to the trial court to configure, to deal with execution under the class action.
Yes, Your Honor, there is a judgment that's already been entered in this case requiring the village to pay restitution in the full amount of the money it received. Judge Oster in the Common Pleas Court made two decisions that would be challenged if the court agrees with us. And so what would happen is that this court would remand it to the 12th District to consider the amount of interest to be provided under that restitution payment and whether that restitution has to be paid right away or could be paid over a 10-year period of time, as Judge Oster had suggested. But there is a final judgment, to answer Your Honor's question directly. There is a final judgment in this case that the motorists are entitled to receive back all the money that they paid under this program.
But the class action, the whatever the award is, would have to be administered, and that would be administered by the trial court, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. It would be a common fund was created by the judgment of the Common Pleas Court. So all that money, the total amount due to the motorists would go into a common fund, and then there would be an administrator who would be in charge of paying the money back to all the motorists. That would be also under the responsibility of counsel to make sure that all the motorists got what was due to them to be refunded.
Thank you.
I think it's important, Your Honors, for the court to recognize that what's at stake here is not merely $95, but what is at stake here is a significant amount of money to a number of working people. You can consider, for example, that the $95 fine in this case is almost a day's pay for someone who's working minimum wage. But I think it's more important to consider that a number of motorists received multiple citations. And looking at the record, there's a motorist named Vicky M. who received 8 citations over a 13-day period in 2013. Another woman by the name of Brittany G. received 10 citations over a 10-day period in May of 2013.
Counsel, I'm presuming there was no signage to let the motorists know that there was a camera?
My understanding, Your Honor, was that there was a small sign that said that speeds are enforced by video or by cameras. But I think what's really important to consider is that unless that sign slowed people down, the woman who received 10 citations over a 10-day period in May would not have even known that she was speeding at the time. And so if the purpose was to slow her down, that wouldn't have happened.
Counsel, you're saying the woman didn't know she was speeding. She was driving her car, was she not?
She was, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, and she was, isn't it the duty of a driver, one of the primary duties of a driver, is to know how fast they are operating their vehicle within the confines of the speed limit?
Of course it is, Your Honor. But what's important is that when a motorist receives a ticket, it is not unheard of in the courts of Ohio or administrative procedures for a motorist to say, I wasn't really speeding. I know state trooper, if you're on the interstate, for example, I know state trooper that you have a radar device saying I was going 78 miles an hour, but I was looking at my speedometer and it said I was only going 68 miles an hour. And what's really important in this case is that if that motorist, Brittany, wanted to come into the hearing and say, I don't think that the cameras were operating correctly. Show me the calibration records. Find me the person who did the maintenance on that. And you compare that to how it would work in a municipal court. In a municipal court, a state trooper, before every time they go out and speed, would have to testify or catch someone speeding, has to testify that I checked the calibration. They'd hold up the little tuning forks in front of the radar device or do whatever is necessary to make sure that the device was operating correctly. And the person would have the ability to ask them and show that the device was operating correctly. That doesn't happen in this case, Your Honor. So if, to directly answer your question, if Brittany thought that she wasn't speeding and she believed that she was operating that, she would have no real ability to challenge that. And that's not just my opinion. That was what the 12th District said in this case. And it's what the 2nd District in Tony said. They said that a motorist who wished to challenge that conclusion would face significant obstacles. And respectfully, that should have been the end of the Matthews analysis, because you don't have a situation that gives you a meaningful hearing if you can't assure that you're receiving accurate and reliable results. And more to the point, a motorist is not required to take the word of the government and its business partner that they were speeding, but they would be entitled to at least look at the records that would show that the machines were operating correctly, which doesn't happen in this case. That's why this program was unconstitutional. And that's why we'd urge you to affirm the decision of the Common Pleas Court finding it unconstitutional and then remand it to the Court of Appeals to consider some of the issues remaining on restitution.
Thank you.
With that, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Engler.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. James Engler for the Village of New Miami, and I'm accompanied by my co-counsel, Anthony Raleigh, who's in the room, but not on the screen. Your Honors, thank you for hearing this case. The first issue that I want to go with is I think the first thing that Mr. Engler raised, that is the matter of revenue that is raised. And he seems to substitute the concern for speeding that this village had and substitute in raising revenue as the object of this ordinance. And that is pure speculation. And also it's forbidden. There's nothing in the record that establishes that. The record with regard to why this ordinance was started was that the police chief was approached by villagers who, as they were coming out of a playground onto Route 127, four-lane highway, major thoroughfare north and south in that part of Ohio, that there was speeding. There had been a serious accident before. The police chief went in his car for a month and a half with radar, measured the speeds in an unmarked car of cars going by, found that there was an issue. Council was also concerned about this. And in the record, the council says that for the ordinance, they cited as the reason the ongoing problem of motorists disobeying speed limit control devices contributing to a significant number of motor vehicle accidents.
Counselor, excuse me.
Yes,
maybe
Your Honor.
If you have 15 minutes, we could talk about your legal arguments a little bit. What about, as I understand it,
you, part of your argument is that because there's an appeal to the Common Pleas Court, the procedures don't matter that happen in the administrative proceeding. Is that right?
That's not how I would characterize it, Your Honor. I would characterize the 250603 appeal to the Common Pleas Court as a safety valve for the, frankly, fairly rare instance when motorists would want to challenge and go sort of like deep into the weeds and obtain the testimony of somebody from Opto Traffic, subpoena him to come in.
Just help me understand how we're supposed to evaluate that, though. Are we supposed to say that because there's an appeal, any problem with due process in the first level is fixed because you have those rights in the Common Pleas Court?
Well, we're saying our position is that the process that is given below is indeed meaningful due process. And I need to take issue with any number of things that Mr. Engel said about the inability of the motorists to defend themselves. They are allowed to do that in the hearing. They can make their own case. They can bring witnesses. They can bring an expert witness. It could be their brother-in-law who's an electrician and knows something about radar.
Well, okay. Excuse me, but
yes,
they could bring in an expert witness. Would that expert witness have the ability to look at the calibration records?
There is a means to do it, and it did happen in this case. The hearing officer, Mr. Iona, testified in his deposition that there had been individuals who used a FOIA request, a public records request, to obtain records and to bring them to the hearing. So that would be possible. And FOIA is not a difficult thing to do. The village turns over its records, which would include calibration, and then the expert can look at those.
Mr. Englert, is that really the right to confront your adverse witnesses? If you can't, I mean, if those hearings, you can't bring in the person from the company and interview them as on cross.
That's correct, Your Honor. You're not able to do that at that stage. And it is an administrative hearing. And the case law in Ohio, the case law that we've cited, and it's law in Ohio and pretty much throughout the country, says that there is not a right to confront witnesses in administrative hearings. Now, certainly there are going to be situations where courts have ruled that needs to happen. And that's where you have a significant deprivation, some ongoing stream of income, or in the Doe versus University of Cincinnati case, the Sixth Circuit held that there would be a right of confrontation of the accusing witness. But the factual situation there was an accusation of sexual assault. And so there are many big interests that are involved in that. The student was going to be expelled from school, and in that case it held. But under Matthews v. Eldridge, it's a sliding scale. You know, you have to look at the private interest at stake, and then the lesser the private interest, the lesser the amount of process that is due. $95, and let me speak to $95. I agree, it's not an insignificant sum, but it's a fairly modest sum. When you look at the scale of all of these cases, it's at the lower range of them. It's also at the lower range of civil offenses that most municipalities have in their codes. It is, as the court in Phillips v. New Richmond said, this is an amount that is proportional to the dangerous offense of speeding.
So how much does it cost to file a 2506 appeal? What's the filing fee?
The filing fee for an administrative appeal is $285 in Butler County, Your Honor.
Counsel, let me change subjects a little bit. In light of the recent amendments to Section 1901.2 of the revised code, the Village of New Miami, does it follow that those requirements?
It does, Your Honor.
Okay, and there is a settlement with the plaintiffs. There's a common fund that's been created.
Not a settlement in this case. There's a judgment against
the judgment. I'm sorry, a judgment. Yeah, okay. Yes, but there's a judgment, right?
Yes, Your Honor. So for $3.2 million, Your Honor.
How much?
$3.2 million.
So why should this court care about this case?
I think that there are two reasons. One, I think, yes, it is very limited in its direct application. The village will lose that revenue that we believe that it obtained, under due process. The other instance, though, is if the court would rule that any violation for 95, any civil offense that has a penalty of $95 or more is going to get a lot of due process, a lot more due process than it presently requires. And there are many civil offenses for $95 that are out there. It can be as little as, not keeping your yard clean. There can also be occupational issues and licenses that are involved. Yes, Your Honor.
Procedurally, the Court of Appeals agreed with you, right?
That's correct.
All right, so the question is, why don't we, if this has no far-reaching ramifications, not great general public interest, 1901.2 takes care of the problem, would this be an opportunity for us to improvidently allow this case?
Your Honor, I believe that it would, and there was an amicus brief filed to that effect. There is also the fact that the court does not need to rule on this because there is a large body of Ohio law. Ohio cases are all on the side of the village here in upholding the due process. Cases out of the Second Circuit, the 12th Circuit, and four or five federal cases as well out of Cleveland.
Are any of those cases have as little process as this one? This one seems to be at the extreme end of all those cases.
Justice DeWine, all of those cases in Ohio and the municipalities we're talking about are Akron, Cleveland, Trotwood, West Carrollton, New Richmond, Dayton. The ordinances are extremely similar. In none of them is there the right of confrontation or the right to subpoena or to obtain discovery of records. So the law is pretty clear in Ohio. I do believe, and if you look at the greater due process analysis that's at stake here, I do believe that it's firmly within the range of affirming due process, and that this case does not present a great general interest that the court needs to weigh in on. Your Honor, if I could talk for a moment about the fact that there is no ability, that this hearing is not meaningful. The first requirement in the second Matthews factor is the risk of erroneous deprivation. We start out actually with a small risk of that. And for one thing, the speeding doesn't start, no citations are issued until you are 11 miles or more above the speed limit. So there's already a wide margin of error there. And then the equipment that is used, it is, we believe, reliable. There is unrefuted evidence in the record from a consultant in this field who testified about the calibration, the annual calibration of the machine, the daily calibration to ensure that the timing is right. They use satellite signals to do this. Optotraffic, the company that was running this, came out 2 to 3 times a week, shut down the entire system, ran through the maintenance, made sure that all the sensors were collected. The sensors use LIDAR. It is reliable information. And so satisfies the due process element there. Mr. Engel says that it's different when there is a declarant with an interest in the outcome, and he's talking about Optotraffic, the company that the village contracted with. We do not think that should be a significant factor. There are numerous cases that indicate, including the I think it's the 7 case, Your Honor, that says that if that company is not participating in an adjudicatory role, then you can't look at the fact that it is making some money out of this instance.
Mr. Engler, isn't this kind of akin to letting a bail bondsman be a probation officer? I mean, look, the company has an interest in making money. So if the calibration were just a little bit off, it's going to make more money, isn't it?
I suppose that it is, Your Honor. But there, first of all, there's nothing in the record to indicate that occurs. Plaintiffs have absolutely no evidence that either, you know, OptoTraffic is incompetent or that it is self-interested to the extent that it would somehow set the machines up in some way.
I understand
that would not yield results.
But excuse me, but there's no way in this procedure to test for that kind of bias, is there? Unless you go to Butler County Common Pleas Court and pay $285.
Well, you could do the FOIA request to get the records, and those records would indicate that they met the calibration. And there's a requirement that the day before, the day of, the day after, that the records indicate that the self-testing has occurred before a notice of liability is issued. But if you do want to actually examine, you know, cross-examine the people at OptoTraffic about how they set this up, yes, you would have to go through a 2506 appeal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd like to bring up the matter that this is a facial challenge here. The standard of review is extremely demanding in a facial challenge. First, there has to be no set of circumstances under which the ordinance could be applied constitutionally. And I think that knocks out immediately the second proposition of law, that is where plaintiff says that the affirmative defenses are not sufficient because it requires the driver, the owner, to identify a driver who is actually driving if the owner was not at the time. That is one set of circumstances. It wouldn't include most set of circumstances that happen. In addition, the burden is that plaintiff has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt in this instance. And here the claim would be that he has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he has that a driver has no opportunity to defend themselves. We think that is not the case. There are these opportunities that we've talked about, no opportunity to raise any kind of defenses. So the law on this is clear in Ohio. This court ruled itself in the Mendenhall v. Akron case that the Akron ordinance passed constitutional due process. It wasn't an involved analysis, but it is in the case. And at the same time, the court cited the Chavez case, the Agomo case, and a third case, all of which upheld due process. Your Honor.
You used your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Engel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This court should decide this case and not decide that it was improvidently granted, because this case has far-reaching implications. It has implications not just beyond the $3 million plus that motorists would be entitled to receive as refunds if this court doesn't affirm what the Common Pleas Court decided in this case. Because this is the beginning. And the court will likely see similar cases and similar claims by municipalities in the future. Dismissing this case as improvidently granted, I would suggest, Your Honors, would set a terrible precedent. You would be saying essentially that a village can collect a ton of money and then avoid any kind of judicial review by making a small change in the law later and then saying, well, things are moot. We're not doing this anymore. We're doing something different. And then they keep the money and they repeat this process again and again. Or as technology advances, you will see similar problems come up again and again, and you will see similar efforts by villages and municipalities who are cash strapped to try to leverage a claim of public safety into an administrative hearing designed primarily to generate revenue. I think the conversation that Your Honor's had about public records really illustrates the danger.
So for a minute here, you just said something that I heard Mr. Englert refute, and that was the intent to raise money, that this was just a scheme to raise money. And he explained that that is not nowhere, except maybe in your statements, is that been found? In fact, there's legitimate evidence that the chief of police, verified speeding as being a problem. Parents, village residents, obviously were concerned about this. So to continuously say this is just a money-making scheme without any evidence to that, any authority, I'm not sure that that's the way to present.
Well, if I may respond, Your Honor, I know I'm out of time, if I may use some time to respond. Two responses, Your Honor. First, the evidence that the village cites is really very thin. I'd refer the court to page 12 and 13 of the deposition of the chief, because he says simply, well, I received a couple of complaints, and then I sat out there and I jotted some notes on a piece of paper, and next thing you know, we're instituting this program. That is not the type of evidence that has typically been required. And the court needs to go no further than look at the record in the Tony decision before the second district, where the city of Dayton did a number of very detailed traffic studies and determined how that the program would actually increase safety, and then went back and, more importantly, checked its own work. What you don't have in this record at all is any evidence that this program actually reduced speeding. But what you do have, and what leads to...
You've used your time. Thank you, John. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.